There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
So from the soundtrack, Matilda, When I Grow Up. And yes, for all the children in the world, what is the future for them? And with anxiety on the rise in children, that's teenagers and even younger, why is that? Where's that anxiety stemming from? And how is it going to impact that child as they grow up? That's what we're talking about in this hour of the show with An Eye on Health with Suzanne Radford. And welcoming to the show, returning actually, we wanted to continue this discussion. It's a real pleasure to welcome back to the show Catherine Dixon, special educational needs teacher at Jebel Ali School. Hello and welcome.
Hello, Suzanne. Nice to be back.
Thank you. Good to see you. Alongside a specialist paediatrician, Dr. Shola Fanaran. She's from the Children's Medical Centre based on our Wassall Road. Hello and welcome to you, Dr. Shola.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. Anxiety, that word, we're hearing it an awful lot. What does it mean? How do we define it on topic today in children? So let's start with you, Doctor.
Now, anxiety on its own generally, it's the normal physiological response that you get to any new situation, or it could be going somewhere or having to do something. It's natural. But we start talking about it being a disorder if it starts impacting on your day-to-day life. It prevents you from going out or doing things that it's expected for your age. Then it becomes a disorder.
I'm glad you said that, because I think many of us will go, well, aren't we anxious? We feel that. We will. Children will feel it. Adults will feel it. What's wrong with that? And I suppose what you're saying is if it starts to hinder how you function during the day.
Absolutely.
So within school and in your experience, Catherine, what do you see? Have you seen anxiety in children?
Yes, definitely I have. I suppose we just need to keep in mind that anxiety in itself isn't a bad thing. It can propel us maybe to do our best, try harder, etc. It's when, like Dr. Shola has said, it gets out of control or reaches a level where it does impact on a child's ability to do their normal daily stuff. And obviously school is a huge part of a child's life, and maybe particularly in Dubai where they have a longer day. So yes, I've worked with children who would have a clinical level of anxiety in terms of a social phobia, a child in particular who refused to go to school for 2 years. He was out of the school system. And I've worked with some children who've had selective mutism. Often you'll see children who have a low level of anxiety around particularly around assessments and tests, or just even daily functioning, just trying to keep up. This would be particularly evident in children who have learning disorders or learning difficulties like dyslexia, because about 70% of those children will have anxiety.
And what would be some of the symptoms or red flags, behaviours, or that you might start to think, okay, what's going on here?
Well, from a parent's point of view, often it'll start before the children actually get to school in the morning. It's the reluctance to go to school, the issues that we would often say are psychosomatic, like bedwetting, nausea, vomiting, headaches, stomach aches, those sort of things. In school, then you will see children who will detach a little bit from the rest of the group, who will underperform in assessments, and you're looking at them thinking, you can do better than this, I know that, but it does impact on their actual ability to do an assessment or a test, whatever, or their just general day-to-day schoolwork.
Mm. Do you find, Dr. Shola, that have you had parents bringing children to you saying, as the first point of call, I think my child has anxiety, would they come to a GP, would they come to you as a paediatrician?
I do see that. And some parents will come in and say, my child has anxiety or my child is anxious. But by the time they do that, though, half of the time they've been trying to manage it at home. So they've been trying to reassure the child. Or I guess the thing that we discourage people from doing is actually enabling them and allowing them not to face the anxiety-provoking situation. So, for example, as Kathy said, a child that has anxiety towards school, allowing them to stay home makes it even more difficult for them to be put back into the school system. So I do get parents that come in to do that.
It might not always be caused by school, though, or, you know, whether it's to do with exams or whether it's to do with even possibly something like bullying, or, you know, it could be something that's happening in the home, but you're seeing the symptoms and signs in school.
Absolutely, yeah. See, with the home one, it's a bit more difficult because the child usually will not disclose to the parents. That's an issue in school, at home, and then the onus is on the clinician to try and get that information out. But because children spend a big time of their life in school, a lot of it then manifests in school and we're able to see it. But if you go through the root cause, it might be totally an issue going on at home.
So according to the American Psychologist Association, looking at anxiety in children, clinging to mom's leg at preschool drop-off, fearing monsters under the bed, their worries, they're a common part of childhood. But for many children, worries are something more. Anxiety disorders are the most common mental health disorders among children and adolescents. Nearly 32% of adolescents in the United States have an anxiety disorder. This is according to a national survey data reported by Kathleen McCangis, PhD, at the National Institute of Mental Health, and exploring this, saying that anxiety is woefully underdiagnosed. Experts who treat children with the disorders, the majority of children with anxiety never receive treatment. One reason for that might be that anxiety symptoms are so variable. Kids with generalized anxiety often feel overwhelmed with worry, and some have physical symptoms such as headaches or stomach aches. So I guess it makes your job very difficult to decipher what is a normal, natural, kind of a little bit anxious, worried childhood concern, as opposed to what is, as you were saying, is actually a disorder.
You can imagine how difficult it would be, though, because when we're talking about the psychosomatic presentations of anxiety, there are presentations, medical presentations, that could be the forerunner for quite serious medical illnesses. So if a child presents to me with vomiting, headaches, tummy aches, I want to make sure that I'm not missing something major in it. But it's really vital and important that you always have at the back of your mind that is this related to anxiety. And you take the time not only to look at the medical things and not over investigate, but also to explore the anxiety related issues.
Talking today with specialist paediatrician Dr. Shola Fanaran. She's at the Children's Medical Centre, that's where she's based on our Wassell Road, alongside Catherine Dixon, special educational needs teacher at Jebel Ali School, bringing a lot of experience working with young people and on various different levels as well. Now, we've got a message come in here. Let's share this message. My daughter has crippling social anxieties that are affecting our lives. She gets anxious if she needs to be around people, even if she knows them, and then will sometimes clam up and freeze, refusing to speak or even start to cry. She's 7, and we're now avoiding social situations because we've tried various techniques and therapy, but she doesn't seem to be improving. She also has problems with constipation and skin rashes, which literally flare up instantly on her neck and chest when she's upset. So, Doctor, your thoughts on this?
Now, these are the kind of kids that I really feel for, because what they're feeling is not something that one should ever downplay. And to the extent where it's now showing in the physical with the rash and her not being able to face social situations, it has to be taken seriously. It really needs to. Because I have seen kids that present this way, and if you manage it appropriately, sometimes it means they need to go on medication. And obviously you can't discount counselling with it. They do well. It's something that can be dealt with, and we really need to work with it.
Okay, so what would normally happen in this situation? Would you be going to a psychologist, to your GP? What's the sort of process potentially for this?
Okay. The way I'd approach it is I'd want the child to have a full assessment, because being a neurodevelopmental pediatrician, I know that sometimes the surface of it might present as anxiety, and I'm not implying it in this child. It could be something like autism, for example, that the child has. So the child needs to have a proper assessment to make sure that we have the right diagnosis and there are no other comorbidities we need to deal with. Then the next step is, how do we manage it? Depending on how significant the issue is, so for this kind of child that is avoiding social situation, it might be a child that I'll put on medication. But medication on its own, it's not going to help the child manage future difficulties with social phobia. So the child needs to see a good clinical psychologist while we're managing with medication to teach the skills on how to deal with the situation and how to manage it. And we gradually introduce the child to situations where it provokes their anxiety so they can practice what they've learned with the psychologist until they're able to do it on their own.
You know, is this something you're familiar with as well, Catherine? Have you seen this in school with, yeah?
Yes, I have. Like I mentioned before, I did work with a child who had been out of the school system for almost 2 years, as far as I can remember. And as Dr. Shola has described, that's exactly how we managed to get him back into school. I should point out he's not in my current school. It was a previous school I worked in, and it was done gradually. He was exposed to school, literally from, you know, the schoolyard, from the periphery. And then, you know, eventually we worked up to a staggered day until he was back in school full time and actually did very, very well. He did have cognitive behavioural therapy, I think, as well as medication, and it was a very good outcome for him.
Why would this kind of anxiety be showing itself in such a way?
Well, in this particular child's case, it stemmed from a very traumatic event.
Okay, so you could clearly identify.
And a marriage breakup as well. That the family home had broken up, and that had impacted very negatively on him. There was a little bit of anxiety as well around wanting to be with the parent. That definitely contributed to it for him.
Mm. And how were the parents, how did they respond to such a diagnosis? Do you recall?
Like Dr. Shola had said, originally they tried to manage the difficulties at home and actually homeschooled him as well, but that wasn't successful, and he needed to be socialised as well. The parents worked very, very closely with the psychologist at the time, and together they managed to get him back into school. They were totally on board, I think, because they had tried so many things at home and therapies and alternative approaches, and that just hadn't worked for him.
Do you think that, you know, is there a kind of stigma around that word, anxiety?
Well, if we use it loosely, people don't have a problem with it, because everybody says, oh, I'm so anxious about this, and we use it almost as a verb, not a disorder. But once it's taken under the medical umbrella and it's described as a disorder, people just have this phobia for mental health issues, and mainly it's because of lack of understanding and awareness. So sometimes it's hard for parents to take the next step. So again, for example, they'll be happy to see a developmental pediatrician rather than a psychiatrist who might be able to do the same thing, because they will assume psychiatry means this is a major mental health illness. We don't want to touch it at all. And unfortunately, it just takes that longer for the child to get a good diagnosis and treatment.
Right. It's interesting. So still seeing that. Are you experiencing that as well, Catherine?
Yes, yeah, definitely. I think as well, too, you know, a lot of schools here don't practice, or it's not part of their curriculum to have mindfulness or growth mindset or yoga or whatever that are known to reduce anxiety in children. And because it's not part of a lot of schools here, you know, unfortunately, it doesn't help, because a lot of the curricula is focused entirely on the academics, or largely on the academics. It is coming in here, luckily. You know, and in my school recently, on our health day, we did shift the emphasis from physical health to mental health. We would have always done yoga, but this year we had Sandy Seeds Company come in and did a lot of mindfulness with parents and children, and that was received really well. We had Phoenix Rising Yoga Company come in, and again, that was done really well, and they've been taken up after school as well too. So I think, you know, the awareness is beginning to increase.
Where and why has this happened? Not that there's anything wrong with doing mindfulness. I love mindfulness and meditation and yoga, but that's not something that I was aware of as a child growing up in school, that was seen as a need or even being part of the curriculum. So where and do you think this rise in talk of anxiety in children is coming from? Why is there an increase? Is it just that we're more aware? Was it always there? Or is there a significant rise in this and you can attribute it to certain factors?
Well, as with all neurodevelopmental disorders and mental health disorders, there is an increase. There is a true increase. Now, yes, we're a bit more aware and we're diagnosing it more and we're attending to it more, but we do know that there is an increase in all, you know, neurodevelopmental disorders. Most of them, we don't know why. We suspect the environment is going to play a big role. There is something we're doing to ourselves that might be contributing to this. There is a big genetic implication on anxiety and all these disorders as well. And you'll find, if you take a good history, that children that present with anxiety, there will be some sort of mental health issue within the immediate family. So talking about the parents or the grandparents or close cousins and things like that. So it's here to stay, and we really need to address it and deal with it.
Catherine, why do you think there's a rise?
Well, I would certainly agree with Dr. Shola in terms of, you know, definitely an increase, and it's more visible. I think definitely we're more aware. It's more visible. I think the expectations for children have, you know, increased so much. You know, if I look back to the start of my teaching career in comparison to now, children are expected to function at such a high level. They're supposed to be so organised, so independent. And that's not even the academics. So I think the expectations of children, I think they feel that pressure much more. And obviously, with all the increased social media use and IT, I think that, you know, makes it much more compounded for them too.
Someone is asking about adults. What about adults with anxiety experience the same socialising issues? That's not necessarily your specialist area, but would it be the same, do you think?
It will be very similar, yeah. Because I do work with older children, adolescents. And again, personally, as a paediatrician, I think the same approach will work just as well. But what normally happens in adults is they just go to the medication part of it because it seems to help quicker, and they don't think to go ahead and get the therapy that will give them more long-term beneficial effects.
I think it's important to highlight about that again, that when we hear medication and having to take medication, particularly in children, it's not, we're not saying that's always the first thing that has to happen, but it might be. And
absolutely,
you know, depending on the type of anxiety your child is suffering, and what it could do is actually very quickly ease a situation. So it's really important to get the right diagnosis for your child.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking more about anxiety in children, the rise in this when it comes to anxiety disorders, and how that might impact a child's health in the long term. So stay with us. My guest today, Catherine Dixon, special educational needs teacher at Jebel Ali School, bringing a wealth of experience to the region. She's part of a team of 9 qualified learning support teachers and assistants led by Olive Clancy, the SENCO Special Ed Needs Coordinator. She's a fully qualified primary school teacher for over 25 years in the UK and Ireland as well, in Qatar, United Arab Emirates, 15 years, which has she's been in the SEN learning support. So it's a real pleasure to have you back on the show, Catherine.
Thank you.
Alongside, again, returning to ION Health, that is developmental specialist paediatrician Dr. Shola Fanaran from the Children's Medical Centre on our Walsall Road. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And we're going to the phone lines. We've got Sabrina on the line. Hello and good afternoon to you, Sabrina.
Hi, good afternoon to both, for all of y'all. I just wanted to ask you, I wanted to talk to you about my 12-year-old son. His name is Ayan. The thing is, like, from the past 1 year, he's been having continuous stomach pain. It's like he had it as a young boy, but now it's been so persistent that one night he got up in the middle of the night, he started crying, and I had to take him to ER. And they had told probably he's got appendix, and then they did his CT scan and all the blood tests possible, and they said there is no problems at all with him. And then at one point they diagnosed him with probably he's got a porphyria or something like that. But then I took him to a hematologist, and then hematologist said no. As a medical, he doesn't have any problem. But I've seen this, like, he's always worried, tense, and he has a fear that he will lose his parents. And actually, I had noticed, like, as a kid, me and my husband used to have lots of fights. And he used to get pressurized because of this. And my husband's anger used to actually hurt him. I can see, I had noticed this, like, when my husband was angry, he used to shout at him. And that actually, he used to just, like, even as a kid now, he's always, like, not as he doesn't back answer. He's like the sweetest boy I've ever known, but he's always having pains, and he keeps telling of body pain also. He's always telling me that he's got pain on his body, and like he's always in pain. I don't know what is it. Like I don't know whether I have to take him to a counselor or a psychiatrist, or do I take him to a therapy? Frankly, I'm actually worried for him.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing that with us today, Sabrina. So, Dr. Shola, what would you say? What advice?
Okay. Thanks so much for calling in to share that. And I do feel so much for Ian and the difficulty he's facing. I think the first thing he needs to do is you get somebody who can look at all those results and make sure we've ruled out every single medical problem this might be. Because the difficulty we have in children, as I mentioned earlier, is some of the symptoms they show is actually a medical issue. Not necessarily for you to do all those tests again, but somebody who knows what they're doing should look at it all. So, for example, with tummy pains, the first thing I want to rule out is chronic constipation, and that's easily treated. And part of it is somebody taking a very good history to see when his anxiety symptoms flares up. Is it more during the day in the constipation? When is that happening? To get a clear understanding. Once that has been done, then irrespective of what the answer is. So say, for example, we find a medical problem. Obviously, Ian still has symptoms and behaviors that's, you know, under the anxiety umbrella, and he needs help for that. Even if it's chronic constipation, he still needs help on how to deal with his fears. And finding a good clinical psychologist is really important for him. Make sure it's a child psychologist, though, not just a general psychologist.
Mm. Catherine, would you want to come in on this as well?
I'm just wondering, I'm hoping that you've informed the school of his difficulties, because a lot of times as parents, we try and cope at home and we don't bring it to the school's attention when it should be the obvious thing to do. So I'm just wondering, have you done that? Do his teachers know of his difficulties?
The teachers, I don't know, because thing is, in between he had problems with his teachers also. Like, he used to always come and tell me that his teachers are being biased, and I don't know how true it is. I don't know whether he's having a problem. Actually, I went and spoke to his teacher also. So she said, like, no, he doesn't, I mean, in school, no issues at all. He's a very nice boy. Everything is like, you know, he's like a normal kid, no issues at all. But during his exams, he's actually, when the doctor was speaking, during his exams, his stomach pain flares up, and he's always like scared. I don't know for what, but I mean, I keep talking to him, and even my husband has changed his way of communicating with him. It's like he tries to talk to him, he bees with him, and like he's more of a friend actually.
Mm. Catherine.
So, yeah, that's good that, you know, you've taken that on board, and that your husband has taken that on board, because, you know, research shows when you shout at children, they don't hear what you say. They just hear the tone of your voice. They don't take in anything if you shout at them. So speaking in a calm voice is a must. I'm wondering too, you know, in terms of approaching school, teachers need to know this information so that they can treat your child with the patience and compassion that he needs and deserves, and definitely bringing to their attention and going back and repeating that to them is really the only way forward, as far as I'm concerned. Schools also should have in place very explicit policies in terms of bullying, behaviour policies, etc., so that parents can make sure that these policies are applied in terms of how their children are dealt with if there is an issue, and what the protocols in place are for dealing with a specific issue. But certainly the teachers need to know that information and need to know that your child is, you know, suffering and in pain. A lot of times children who have anxiety are very good at masking it. They put on a smile and they get through the day, and then at home as parents, you know, that's when all the issues can explode. A lot of times they're very lethargic in school. If they're not sleeping well, if they're not eating properly, they're lethargic and tired, and so that's when the teachers will see it, and that obviously will impact on concentration as well.
Yeah.
Dr. Shona's just going to come back in there as well, Sabrina.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I really would support what Kathy has said, because, as you know, a big part of his day is in school, so you do need to address that a bit better. But the other thing, though, that I always encourage parents to do is also look at the parents themselves getting counseling and help on how to deal with this situation. Because I have had instances when the main issue that came forward was a child's behavior difficulties. And at the end of the day, I spent most of the time doing marital counseling and found that dealing with the issues between the parents was enough to bring down the child's anxiety or even give them more confidence to be able to discuss their issues and take on board what you're saying with them. I don't believe an issue is just a child's issue when it comes to mental health. I think it's more a function of the whole family with the child being in the center.
Sabrina, what's really good today is you've reached out and you're clearly, you and your husband are doing your best to understand and do the best for your son. And you know, you're not alone. Lots of parents, lots of children are experiencing and suffering from anxiety. So really what you need to do is go back and get another opinion, I think. Go and see a GP, go and see a paediatrician, also maybe look at a psychologist as well. So the two go hand in hand for your boy, but also maybe as a family, as a group as well, so you've got better understanding of how to deal with it. Is that okay for today?
Yeah, doctor. Another thing, like I'm sorry, I didn't put this before. Actually, he is like, you know, one thing I've noticed in him, he's like, he tries to make, he wants to keep us happy. Like, you tell him anything, even if he's like, you know, it's wrong, he's like, okay, I'm ready to do. Okay, you tell me, if you're saying it so, it's like that. It's like, he's doing it to make me and his father happy. It's like that. Like, you know,
is that quite typical? Is that
it is. Yeah. And I think you've got a wonderful boy. Because unfortunately for some people, it's the other way around and the kids act out. So more so why we need to get Ian some help to make sure that he performs right.
Yeah. Thank you, Sabrina. We wish you and the family all the best. Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, he does sound like a lovely boy, actually. And I think that's the other thing, isn't it, about your child's personality and sensitivity. You know, we all have different levels of sensitivity and being able to read that and understand that well.
Yeah, definitely. And Dr. Scholl and I were just talking about this before we came on in air. I was reading recently how the amygdala in children who have anxiety, so that's the area of the brain that's the fight or flight response, the area of the brain that deals with fear, that it is enlarged in children. MRIs show that it's enlarged in children who have anxiety. So clearly, you know, the children, physiologically, these children might be made up differently. And also anxiety over time is going to impact on them. So in my experience, children with anxiety want to please. They're very, you know, that's the best case scenario. The children who want to please, who want to get on, who want to be accepted, and that in itself is a pressure on them.
Stay with us. More to come and more of your questions we're addressing today on anxiety in children. One here, my daughter suffers from anxiety. She's smart, very competitive and always wants to be the best in everything she does. She gets really worked up before exams, sport, competitions, etc. She develops physical tics and gets stomach problems. Her teacher says she would do better in exams if she wasn't so worried about doing well. She's been to a therapist, but it didn't help, as she's afraid that if she changes anything, she might not be the best. How can I help her? So that's a very interesting message. Let's start with that.
The kind of child that's just described is the typical kind of child we get and with anxiety. They're the high achievers, the high performers, the ones that want to do well. And yes, they should be supported in doing well, but not to the detriment of them being able to function properly. I'm sorry you've already seen a counselor and that didn't work out right, because in all honesty, that's the best thing for her. At this point in time, it's not a case of her changing what she does, but finding ways to understand herself and knowing that some of the feelings she's getting and overinterpreting are absolutely physiological. That's the way your body copes with you being about to do something. And then learning ways, be it breathing or maneuvers and things, to help her to control it, so she can then move on to do what she needs to do.
Another message here. My three-year-old seems very stressed about losing our nanny because the nanny is through a company. We've changed many nannies. We've had lots of different ones. And the latest one was for 6 months, just over. She took a sudden break when our family went through a tough time. She returned and maybe my three-year-old is highly sensitive, thinks it might happen again. I've spoken to him and told him we can manage with whichever nanny is with us and that the current one won't go away. But I feel he's pressured. He's startled easily. He's a low risk taker physically, so no jumping around too much. He is one of twins and an NICU baby, 3 years of age.
That is an interesting issue as well. Now, for me with that child, it's a bit hard for you to say the nanny is not going to go away, because you really don't have control. She might go away. I'd say more will be if the nanny goes away, walking through scenarios. At age 3, there's a limit to their understanding that talk will do. So normally I recommend social stories of different ways you can look. Okay, if the nanny does go, these are the other things we can do, and try and put a positive spin in it. Because for you and I as adults, we know it's not the end of the world. But for a 3-year-old, where the center of the world is the house and the nanny, it is the end of the world for him if the nanny goes. So preparing him appropriately, not saying the nanny is going to go, but for the eventuality, would be a way to try and get him through it.
Those sort of tools and techniques in the school, in a school environment, Catherine, with regards to how children manage their emotions. We were talking about this actually last week on the couch with Dr. Thrai Kanafani, a clinical psychologist, but I'm interested from the teacher's perspective. It must be something that's part of your daily life, but are there specific sort of techniques to helping children manage their emotions?
Yes, there are. It's not particularly a significant part of the curriculum here. We do, all schools would have counsellors, and they would have social skills group where children can focus on those skills particularly. There's definitely been a move towards more generalisation of skills, so that mindfulness is part of the day, brain gym, more positive self-talk and growth mindset. It's already part of the curriculum in the UK and Ireland, and hopefully it will become so here, not just in a more systematic way. But certainly there are tools that you can give children in terms of positive self-talk. A lot of children with anxiety are very hard on themselves, and they have very high expectations of themselves. So like Dr. Shola said, it's about giving them strategies to manage that. And a lot of that is done through positive sentences, positive self-talk, and little mantras. And mindfulness is a good way to do that. As well, as we know, on meditation.
And the health implications. So other health implications to this. You mentioned before, actually, from our caller, the little boy with constipation. You know, we know that the brain and gut is linked and connected, and that we can be very affected. If we're in stressful situations, it can affect our bowel movement and how our body is. So things like IBS, it's not always necessarily the case, but I was looking earlier at the UK and Anxiety UK. They've even got a section on their page about irritable bowel syndrome, and they talk about what it is, they talk about the symptoms, which we've talked about many times on the show. One of the causes possibly can be when someone has been through a particularly stressful period in their lives. It's not really known how these events trigger IBS, but it could be. The diagnosis, it's an inflammatory bowel disease, and then there's links to IBS and anxiety. Now, Dr. Shola, you can tell me your thoughts on this, but according to this website, when it's anxietyuk.org.uk, it's saying IBS is not a psychological disorder in itself. It can be closely linked to stress and anxiety because of the connection between the brain and the gut. Even people who don't suffer from IBS sometimes find that they need to go to the toilet if they're nervous, and this is a result of the so-called brain-gut connection. So what's your take on it?
That I totally agree with. Now, I don't think anxiety causes IBS, but if you look back, people that are diagnosed with IBS might have had symptoms that was labeled as anxiety when they were younger, because it's the same bowel symptoms. And at the end of the day, as that research says, it's a physiological process. You feel anxious, you release neurotransmitters, they affect the way your bowel motility and things like that. So people who are prone to inflammatory bowel disorder, if they have anxiety on top of it, it can potentiate the symptoms, make it happen earlier, or make it worse or more obvious for them.
So if you were an anxious child suffering from an anxiety disorder, what might be some of the long-term health implications, if there are any at all?
Now, just picking different areas. So, for example, if it says social phobia, and you're allowed, or because of your phobia, you choose not to go into certain situations, it might affect the kind of job you do at the end of when you're an adult, or where you choose to go, or how you live. It might lead to self-isolation. It might lead to other mental health issues like depression, or be associated with it. Some, it might be self-harm. Some might then turn to other means of trying to control the anxiety using illicit substances, which again at the end causes its own difficulties. It might lead to anger management issues because they're upset other people are not understanding them. And if it's not managed well, it does lead to a lot of problems later on that, you know, you could have managed and dealt with at the younger age for the child.
And they make those links, don't they, to, you know, sort of lifestyle choices sometimes, you know, so that could lead to, like you were saying, maybe substance abuse, possibly obesity, and then the potential complications with your health linked to that.
To that, absolutely.
Yeah.
And a lot of, from what I've read too, a lot of adult psychiatric illnesses have stemmed from childhood, and anxiety often will be the first marker, and that may then lead to depression. And that's particularly true of children who have learning difficulties. You know, unfortunately for them, you know, life can be a little bit harder for them as well too in general. So it, you know, again, it's really important that teachers and children are mindful of those facts and are as supportive and as aware as possible. And you know, definitely as a parent, we tend to invalidate a child's feelings often by saying to them, you'll be okay, and we fob it off because that's what we think is the best thing to do, but it's not. So, you know, it's important to remember that.
And the basics, back to basics, you know, exercise, good food, healthy food, lots of hydration. All of these things can help a little bit in their own way, all put together to manage your emotions.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for children in particular, being active, you know, have, you know, being at school and doing as much sports, PE and activities as they can, definitely helps.
Well, thank you, ladies, for your time today. We could go on. I'm sure we will return to the conversation. It needs to continue as anxiety is in the rise, anxiety disorders in children. But talking today to Catherine Dixon, special educational needs teacher at Jebel Ali School. Thank you, and wishing you and your team all the best there at Jebel Ali School. Thank you. Alongside developmental specialist paediatrician, that's Dr. Shola Fanaran from the Children's Medical Centre on Al Wassell Road. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've linked all your details, websites, contact details, etc., on our blog post today at dubaii1038.com. Check that out. And I leave you today with a few more moments from the musical Matilda, When I Grow Up. Have yourselves a great day.
Creatures that you have to fight beneath the bed each night to be a grown-up.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.